Virginia and be a small-town country doctor in the mountains in Franklin in the National Health Service Corps for 13 years, and then came back, did my MPH, and was complaining so much about the public health system that the commissioner told, he sort of said, he was retiring, he said, if you, you know, come try it and see what it's like. So I was state health officer for 6.5 years, 2 administrations, and a couple of political party changes. And then I've been really passionate about the workforce, because I think the greatest threat to the health of the public right now is anticipating these huge workforce challenges that are about to hit us. And the projections are just phenomenal. And we're having to remember all that old stuff. And how are we going to create this knowledge transfer? So we can use a lot of theory, but as Larry Green says, if you want more evidence-based practice, you need more practice-based evidence. So that's been, at this point in my career, it's a little bit nerve-wracking to be one day a week a health officer, one day a week a clinician, and 3 days a week doing research and teaching. But it keeps me right in that tension point, which I think is so important to really advance the field. So what I'll do is talk about this concept of role-based succession planning, but I will ground it in a 5-year project that we did in West Virginia. I'm not going to do that project much justice, but I use that just to anchor some of the deeper concepts. And my goal is to figure out, can we really move forward and use this concept of roles to help people who are on the front line be a little bit more practical? I mean, we've got all the theory. If we had all the time in the world, if we had an HR person assigned to our unit, hey, you know, we could do a lot. We could be like business, but we don't. So what all the research has come to is actually a simple question. I'll do a show of hands here. Take a minute, think of being in a frontline public health job. I don't care where it is. Okay, this is a test. Pick anything you want, but a job where you're out there actually doing the work of public health. How many hats do you wear? Be honest, let's start. More than 10. Okay, I want a show of hands here. Okay, 7 to 10. 5 to 6. 3 to 5. Anybody 1 to 2? Okay. Usually, if you ask that question, use that as a test question. My email is hgtaylor. Just remember the G, or Holly Taylor gets bothered. And you can put whatever, she's really polite about it, but I just, and you can put JHSPH or JHU is easier, just jhu.edu. I would be really interested in people trying this question out, because I think that there's a lot of power in that statement. You can walk into any program in a state health department, a nonprofit organization, a frontline local health department, and say, hey, I'm Henry. Let's talk about the work you do. Let's talk about who's coming in later on. And oh, by the way, how many hats do you wear? And first, usually 1/2 to 3/4 of the people will laugh. And then they'll get this little smile, and then they'll start thinking, and then they'll start listening. So we had 5, I think you came up with. The very frontline entry people will be about 2 to 3 in their first year on the job. And the senior people just guffaw, and they say, well, I have 1, which is to do everything. And the deputies say, I only have 1, and it's other duties as assigned. So, but how can we ever plan for succession? How can we ever plan for this transition if we're at the level of all of these different roles, tremendous variation in the skill sets coming in, lack of accreditation, lack of credentialing, and personally, I think some of the efforts to systematize in a regulatory way may come back and bite us. So that's a whole nother discussion I won't engage in. But we have to really be smart about how we do it. So I'm not saying I'm smart, but I'm at least, does that trigger anything for people now? What I've often found actually is, you know, I'm glad to throw my talk out the window and have a discussion with this group. And Mark will make sure I don't, my main criteria for success in a presentation is to finish 1 minute early. So Mark's going to give me that 2-minute warning. Was that 2 minutes? Oh. Does that trigger anything? Is this, are we rehashing something that's already out there? Am I missing something? Hearing no objection. Okay, what is succession planning? Because business has talked about succession planning, and we, being good plagiarists, have picked up their language, and we also talk about it. But how do we do it, and how is it a practical way? Annie E. Casey Foundation has funded a fairly significant effort to look at how to do succession planning and executive transition with nonprofits. But it is very, very difficult to find succession planning for government. Several states have really done a good job, and it's your state HR people who used to drive me nuts when I was a health officer. But actually, once you get to know them, they're pretty nice. They're probably some of you in the audience, you know, sort of lurking there. It's like, and the staff are always like, I don't want to talk to them. They don't understand. Well, how do we explain it to them? You know, so that's a whole nother discussion. But how do we be systematic? How do we have a pipeline? And the Public Health Foundation has started this effort called the Pipeline Project. And I think that is actually a very transformative concept. Most of workforce development to date has been, and I, no offense intended, but we have basically been at the level of body counts. Well, body counts are fine maybe on a battlefield, but it doesn't help you plan your strategy. You need a pipeline. You need a forward momentum. We need a dynamic systems approach. And I don't think we've really, I think we're getting there, but all of the presentations today, I think, are really getting at more of a dynamic systems approach. And the people who follow, that's where when you were offering to go later, first of all, I want to listen to everybody else and not worry about my talk. But secondly, it gives me the opportunity to kind of paint these broad brushes. And I can see how each of the presentations that follow are going to get at the issue of competencies. And how do we really work with competencies and turn that into training? And how do we really cross generations? And, you know, how do we really weave all this together and getting at roles and job descriptions and role job duty sheets, okay? Yes, sir, duty sheets, okay. But duty sheets are, I think, very practical. That's what's transformed the airline industry. They have their punch cards, they go down the list. We're using it in preparedness. There is a lot of power in the rest of the presentations. That is what makes us systematic. If we aren't systematic, we can't research it. There's no point in researching it unless we can turn it into action. We need to do active surveillance on ourselves so that we can bring the next generation on board. And it's focused on the organizational function and development. Now, there are people who have PhDs in this, and I don't even know their language. I have one friend who happens to have gotten into it, but I'm a doc. I don't know this stuff. So people can help me do this better, and that's my appeal to you today. So hgtaylor@jhu.edu. I'll send you the PowerPoint. I'd love to engage. If there's some way that we can do some shoe leather epidemiology on all this, there won't be any money in it. Nobody's funding workforce. But, you know, maybe that's better. Maybe we'll be more practical and simple. Okay. So the several concepts that we feel is very important, that you have the pipeline of talent and you think about talent pools, because if you really want to move to the future, we need those pools of talent and we need the pipeline in order to be able to aim the fire hose at whatever disaster we're facing. We chose in this project, or we evolved over 5 years with the West Virginia WIC project. The program itself started in West Virginia WIC when I was commissioner, and then when I left, I was a consultant to them. And then we have worked with the 10 states in the Mid-Atlantic region. But it's been very hard to take it to the next implementation level because everybody gets so busy. And now with H1N1, we were trying to do something with Maryland State Health Department. And everybody says, oh, I can't think about succession planning because I'm dealing with H1N1. Well, 40% of your people are going to be sick. So what part of planning your workforce are you not doing? You're just doing it, but you can't call it, you can't take the reflective time, so don't get me started. So I think the issue here that we on the front line need to understand is an old concept of planning from the 1970s called functional analysis with role reallocation. Bill Ranke and all the folks there, they did a lot of research, and they had, Tim Baker had figs and dates, and they had all these complex spreadsheets in days before there were spreadsheets, and it collapsed of its own weight. It was too complicated. But the focus was the same thing. And then as you get into competencies, at the Preparedness Center, we're toying with a very core idea that for somebody to be prepared, there are three components. They need to be ready, willing, and able. And that is like the lawyer saying, are you going to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? Ready, willing, and able are three different constructs. Most of preparedness and most of succession planning focuses on people's abilities, their innate abilities or the learned abilities. Willingness and motivation is a whole, you know, I'm not enough of an extrovert, but that's, and then readiness to really do the job is a whole nother thing. So that maybe that will be useful as we move forward. So one concept that was very important is the notion and the differentiation of emergency succession planning versus long-term succession planning. And as we worked with the WIC directors and local health department people, we found that they sort of go, oh, and they engage with the emergency succession planning, you know, what if you were hit by a bus tomorrow or today? Who's going to fill in for you? And we have not been able to get to the boards of health, but there are templates through NEA Casey Foundation, not for public health departments, but for nonprofits, which probably could transfer to a board of health. So how are they going to replace their leader when politics dictates that they have to fire them? Okay, they get up, you know, someone like me gets up, opens his mouth, it's like, okay, bye, you know, you shouldn't have said that, and they're out of there. So how do we have the Board of Health prepared to replace the leadership and the senior leadership? We particularly have focused in West Virginia on issues of National Guard absenteeism and having to keep the positions vacant. Even something as simple as jury duty or childcare or H1N1 for your 93-year-old father. Then we get into the long-term succession planning, which is what most of the business folks think about. But business is smart enough to think about how when they're expanding their market, when they're taking on a new condition, whatever the disease of the month is in public health, business is smart enough to think, oh, what's the military term? Troops to task? Oh, we have a new thing we're going to have to do. Who are the troops we need to send over there? And then we can get to what I think we all know is really the heart of it, which is the workforce development and training. But other, so who keeps the public healthy? That was supposed to. Oh, well, that's a good picture. There were graphic animations on that. But who keeps the public healthy? And I had just a whole display of a lot of different public health heroes, shots, vaccine clinics, sanitarians. You know, just to say we have a very diverse workforce. And I ended with this slide. Because these are the folks who will keep the public healthy in 2030. And how are the multi-generational folks coming on? And it will tend to probably be women with science and math aptitude who want global careers, are going to marry a doctoral level partner, and want to have something with social justice, a place where they can walk in anywhere in the world and have sort of a known base. Hey, public health's missing an opportunity. We've all seen these sorts of data, and these are the body counts, which are important. I'm not criticizing the body counts, because we haven't had them. Okay, even the 2000 survey that Chris Gebbe did misrepresented. I was commissioner at the time in West Virginia. I couldn't say anything, because West Virginia came out 29% better than we really were. I never saw the survey. It went to our HR department. They filled it out. They included folks from Human Services who had this, who were using our job titles. Okay. So, but I, you know, it was still better than what we had before. But, you know, this is the crisis that we're facing. And I could have gone, I dropped a lot of slides on that. But are these, oops. Oh, I see. That's why it's not. These are my notes here rather than that. Anybody have major problems with those? I'm sure we could spend the whole session talking about that. How close am I? So we started with the WIC directors and created a four-point readiness assessment. And we don't even, you know, we don't even start work unless they meet these. This is from a project done by some leadership scholars in Maryland. And the top is from, this is the WIC studies, and then this is the leadership scholars in Maryland. But again, you know, everybody, we're somewhere in the 40 to 50% turnover, whether it's 5 to 10 years, you know, that's. So this was the team. Everybody says pay them more, but that's not an option. So what do you do? This is just an example of what we were dealing with in, okay, so USDA's got money, WIC was able to pay for me to do this, and they had teams, and WIC's just fun to work with. So we used WIC, you know. Could have been anybody, but WIC had the money. But this isn't news to anybody, and we'll hear more about this. We're dealing with half of the people being high school graduates, which means really on-the-job training. We have a very dedicated group. The WIC directors did their own assessment and said, if you don't have money, what else can you do? And this was the list that they came up with and created a sense there's a lot we can do even if we can't pay people more. And they focused then, that last one focuses on the career ladder. I'm sorry, I am picking up speed here. If folks are not familiar with, well, ACT, anybody with college-age students, that they have a process of job analysis called Work Keys. It's been thoroughly vetted, and we hired, it was $1,600 per Work Keys profile for each of the categories. They have a very structured approach and came up with lists for each of the five categories in the public health and nutrition career ladder that we were creating. They had, on average, 93 employee-based tasks from the front line. So a nutrition assistant, which is a new category, came up with things you would expect. But counseling? Okay, these are people who are a mom with a successful breastfeeding experience and a high school education. They're doing counseling. They're being taught motivational interviewing, which docs aren't being taught. And then down here, provides emotional support. They're the first ones who deal with a mom whose baby dies. And she's got engorged breasts. And they're doing frontline PTSD counseling. So we created a career pathway. You can start as a mom with a successful breastfeeding experience and work your way up. You don't need to follow. But we mapped out how you could become the director of a WIC agency with an MBA. Now, nobody's going to go through that. But we connected all those dots in this one. It's just, you know, one thing is one thing, but at least is a proof of concept that you can do it. But this is too complicated. So what we distilled down were for the frontline practitioners, this is the seven steps. We created a workbook that follows this methodology and walks people through it, breaks them in slowly. Because what we felt, I mean, you can get into ONET. Does everybody know ONET? This is too much detail, so I'm. But ONET's a really vast resource. They have every job categorized into all these components. They have surveys. They have something like 6,000 job profiles. I mean, it's just a huge data set. So you immediately get overwhelmed. And the question we faced was, how deep should you go? Because you can get into all this detail and you lose the forest for the trees. So we decided that was there any way we could short circuit here? This is all there underneath, but can we jump forward? And that's what led us into the concept of roles. I think we at the same time were dealing with Incident Command and NIMS. And so that's actually the connection to preparedness, because everybody now in most health departments has an emergency preparedness function, and we shift. We tell people to wear a different hat as soon as that switch is flipped. This is just reviewing what I'm worried about the time. So the first thing we ask them, what are the positions? Who's in it now? Who are you going to replace them with? We just say, before you leave the workshop, fill this out. Go back, ask those staff if they're ready to do it. We then take it into the next level. What are the positions? What are the different roles? And we find there's a lot of crossover in the competency sets. We're finding that their skill set clusters is what we think. But how do we mix and match and combine? So that's why I want to finish so that we... And then we got into doing this PEST assessment, which is a variation on SWOT. And we do, in the interest of time, I'm... And then we finally sort of wind up with the group there of what are your feeder pools, what's the preparation, who are the partnerships, and is it okay to be growing talent for someone else? And a lot of local health departments, yes. They will bring in a new nurse, they'll train them in public health, and then they'll go on, or a nutritionist going on to diet. That's okay. They had to get that in their heads that it was okay to do that. So this is the wind up. Same slide you've seen before. Same slide you've seen before. That was it. Okay, thank you.